Hey, what's going on, Clipper Nation? It's me, William, the Opinion Updike.
And I am positive Chuck Mockler.
And we are joined by the ethereal?
I'll take ethereal. Brian Cullen.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Brian.
If you haven't checked it out yet, we were on the Clipset podcast with Brian Cullen. Check that out on iTunes, Clipset Podcast, or just wherever you get your podcast. But today, for you on Locked On Clips, we're going to be kicking things off with a recap of the victory over the Heat.
Mm-hmm.
Another in a line of good games.
Yeah, we got three in a row right now. We're going into a back-to-back that might have a trap game, but it's going to have to be a pretty big trap. So we could be putting a nice string together.
But we're going to be talking about what we liked in that game, as well as a couple of things we didn't like, and overall just how we're feeling. And then it is Hot Take Thursday. Don't forget to go ahead and leave your hot takes for us. That number again is 213-986-7354. Charles, what do you always say to him?
Just try and not curse. Do your best.
You can't curse. and then in the shavings drawer for you, Iggy is officially off the table.
Good year for Iggy.
a lot of weird big trades going on, not so much just in like the caliber of player, not anything against them, but the number of players.
Yeah, I think complicated trades
has been a little bit dazzling, but we'll talk about some other trade targets that could still be out there for the Clippers, as well as, you know, if we think they're going to make any movement at all. So all of that and more coming up right about now.
So we just got out of Staples after the Clippers kind of trounced the Heat 128-111. Which was nice to see. This one kind of started goofy.
It started, kind of similarly to how I thought the game would play out, in that it would just be a much closer game.
Mm-hmm.
All the fouls in this game were really early. You had Paul George with three right away.
I thought we were going to lose the game after Paul George got those two quick fouls.
Yeah.
Because when obviously any key guy gets two fouls that quick, it throws off the game plan, but it seems to really throw off Doc's rotations when that happens. So,
which I gotta be honest, I kind of thought worked into the favor of the Clippers a little bit because it forced Doc's hand at staggering PG and Kawhi.
Yeah, Kawhi played the whole first quarter, PG played the whole third quarter.
Yeah,
so they literally traded whole quarters,
but it ended up working out because the bench was giving up a lot of points, and as soon as one of those guys entered, like Kawhi with the bench or PG with the bench, looks really good.
For sure. Yeah. Let's get into what we liked about this game. Brian, you're the guest. What did you like about this game, first off?
The second half.
yeah, that was the best part of this game.
73 points in the second half is really impressive. Doc talked about it in his post game, but man, I don't know if I'm going to get used to watching Kawhi's passing game. I just wasn't expecting it coming into the season, so it's like surprising every time I watch it. He had some beautiful bounce passes in this game, like really targeted bounce passes.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just getting into their sets, feeling comfortable in the system, like it, you're seeing it start to happen. You know, no Patrick Beverley through most of that second half.
Yeah, he's got a groin injury we'll talk about in the what we didn't like part.
But even with him out, just the way the offense was flowing, with the lack of turnovers in the second half, it just looked like the team's getting really comfortable together. And this isn't an easy team to do that against. They've got a lot of length. Yeah. I mean, they had a lot of second chance points too in this game, but mm-hmm. just the production on the passing game all around from the team was great.
Yeah, PG and Kawhi combined for 19 dimes.
Yeah, so our two highest assist totals this season have come in these past two Heat games.
Oh damn!
So I think it's great to see like where the ball movement can be. And I mean the biggest thing though is honestly just guys able to knock down these shots. I think from
that does help.
That curve is synonymous. But yeah, I think in both of these games, we've shot 45 and 44% from three.
What's crazy about shooting 44% from three in this Heat game is that we took 54 threes.
Yeah. Yeah. New franchise high in made threes.
Blows my mind. PG finished with 23, 10, and 5. Kawhi had 14, 7, and 9, which doesn't exactly jump out of the page at you. But early on in that first quarter, what do you have, 6, 5, and 4?
Yeah, I was going to say, when those, we really those needed assists it. And rebounds came out of that first quarter.
Yeah, really. It was clutch. Zubats was huge. He had 12 and 8. Rim protection was fantastic. There was a sequence where he got an offensive board, dunked it, and then on the next possession, Olynyk tried to like dunk on Zubats for some reason, and he just bodied him up and like met him right in the air. Olynyk obviously bounced off him, and we got the ball back.
Well, his presence was great. I think he did a really good job of making Bam Adebayo really uncomfortable on his drives to the rim. Like, you saw him kind of shying away from Zoo as he was running down the lane. And I mean, we can talk about it later, but that wasn't happening with another unit on the floor.
Yeah.
But just his presence in the paint tonight, you could really feel it. He was, you know, he wasn't like racking up a ton of blocks, but he was altering the way guys were shooting around him, which is nice to see.
Yeah, he affected Bam. I mean, like that matchup, I thought would be good for Zoo, but he even surprised me. With
hey,
what
it made
he was
him
able
super
to do.
Uncomfortable out there.
That's all you can do, you know. It was pretty. So in the first, I think one of the things we were kind of lucky about in this game, in the first half, we lost turnovers, 3-point percentage, and free throw attempts. We were only down 3. So the Heat really could have made this a lot harder on us. Shamit had a Clippers career high with 23 on 6 of 13 from 3 and 6 dimes. Like, Shamit was crucial. He had the 10 points, 10 Clippers points in a row in like the last, was it like the last like 2.5 minutes or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
He's, I don't want to say he saved the game, but the Heat were cutting it close.
I was going to go even crazier and say he kind of won the game for the Clippers.
Okay.
And we can touch on that a little bit later if you want, but his just clutch shots, he had, yeah, like you said, Tenshi, he had the two mid-rangers and then the back-to-back threes. It was so nice to see him get in that rhythm, especially seeing him come out the last couple games with tape on his wrist again, which made me a little concerned, but it doesn't seem like that's affecting his shot.
My first idea was that was a comfort thing. Like, maybe like a...
Could be.
I was, you know, maybe I should have the tape on. Maybe I was shooting better when that was happening or something like that.
It's totally possible because we haven't heard anything else about it, right?
Yeah.
It just kind of came out of nowhere.
He also doesn't talk even to the training staff about his ailments. So no. I don't think that we're going to hear anything.
Farbod was like, oh, what happened to your wrist? Looks like you got a little banged up. And he's like, yep, got a little banged up.
Just the wrist. Got a little banged up.
I was going to say on Shamit, I just think the concerted effort to get him looks was great. He only got 2 looks in the last game. So
yeah.
And you know, Doc acknowledged that after the game. And so when we have these concerted, let's get Sham going games, it does wonders for the Clippers offense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had more than 6 attempts in the first half.
Yeah. And he was the 6th man tonight. He was the first guy off the bench.
Yeah.
He's really comfortable being on the floor with Kawhi and PG.
It's almost like he should
start.
Maybe start the game.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, and I get why he doesn't with what Mo can do defensively and alleviate some of that task for Kawhi and PG. But I like the idea of if he's going to come off the bench, being the first guy off the bench, because then he gets minutes with most of that starting unit and they really get him going.
It helps with the stagger too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, good call.
Speaking of Mo Harkless, he had a great game.
Bro, we got a hug for Harkless. If you're listening to this podcast, we haven't done this in a while.
It's mostly been
Mo's fault. you got a hug for Harkless. 11-7, 60% from 3. Just as a whole, we had 8 guys in double digits in this game.
Yeah.
We're not... I don't think we'll lose any game in which 8 guys are in double digits.
I would hope. I don't want to know what the other side of that game looks like if we lose something like that.
Yeah. Anything else that you liked particularly?
I think that mostly covers it. Let's get into what we didn't like. You talked about Shamit more or less winning us this game. What would you say almost lost this game?
Okay, I'll be the one to take this one. So Shamit's shooting performance shadowed what Trez was giving up on defense tonight. To the exact opposite of what I was saying about Zoo making Adebayo uncomfortable on his drives to the rim. When he had Trez in front of him, he was extremely comfortable going to the rim.
Trez makes no big uncomfortable.
No, yeah, absolutely. And
on the defensive end, totally. Offensively, yeah, fourth quarter, yeah. Trez was
because he's super,
nice.
He's super, yeah, bouncy. He's hard to contain there. But on the defensive end, teams have been eating in the paint, but we've been getting other guys going on the wings, which kind of overshadows what's happening down low. And I think that. To, you know, unfortunately vindicates some of these rotations that Doc is rolling out, and it allows him to play Trez those final 18 minutes of the game. Whereas I feel
did
like
he play 18 minutes straight.
He came in right around the 5 minute mark in the third quarter. Yeah, so yeah.
I think so. Just the
how is he still doing it? I just mean Trez's body.
For his sake. Yeah, for his sake.
I just mean, like, how is Trez's body able to still do this? There's got to be, I mean, off the bench minutes, I'm sure he's leading the league in off the bench minutes. He has to be.
I'm sure he is.
I wonder if, I don't know, I want to look at the stats on that, because, like, he's played whatever the record is for, like, 13 plus minute stretches in a season. Off the bench, he has to be.
And for his style of play, because he's such an energy guy. Like,
we were talking about that when he was sick.
Yeah. And it, well, oh, yeah, how much his, if you have the flu, how much it must suck to try and play as Trez. Yeah. Like, you're going to take a charge.
Yeah, totally. Like,
and you know, that is, like, the one, like, one of the credits to his defense is he is still, like, taking charges, and he is doing some things. But, like, I think that it's apparent even on court that, like, some of these defensive struggles are purely just a side effect of the fatigue.
That could totally be it, but I mean, 100%. he got played off the floor against San Antonio. Totally. Zoo played fourth quarter minutes because Aldridge was killing him.
Yeah.
And because I think Trez, didn't he roll his ankle in that game, or was that the games before?
That was in the Spurs game, I believe.
No, that was the one before. That was the noon game.
Oh, yeah. God, it takes your whole day, those noon games. Yeah, like, I mean, the slow start was kind of rough to not like in this game. Like, I was a little worried. It was like, oh, shit. But then, honestly, looking at the halftime stats, it's incredible that we were only down three.
Yeah,
like, the team looked disjointed. Like, not like, we didn't look bad. I don't mean it like that. But, like, it just wasn't, like, clicking early.
Totally.
We were kind of getting by.
Well, in that first half, I think, stuck with me a lot. Toward the end of the game, I saw that the team shot 50% from the floor. I was like, wow, that did not feel like the team was shooting 50% from the floor.
That's that 73-point second half.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we touched on a little bit. One thing we really didn't like, Bev's groin aggravation.
Yeah, I don't love that either.
It's going to be evaluated, well, today, if you're listening to the podcast. I don't know. He was talking shit to Jimmy Butler on Twitter, so it's probably fine.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just another one of those, like, kind of perplexing, confusing injuries.
And it's the second time the groin has come up this season.
And that he's been held out of a game, yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully they proceed with caution. Doc kind of alluded to the fact that they were still playing under minutes restrictions.
Yeah, apparently there's like six people under minutes restrictions, which I still don't believe.
But sometimes they're either very liberal or they are being...
The minutes restriction, I think, for some of these guys is literally 37 minutes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So how are we feeling real quick heading into this weekend back-to-back?
Remind me again what the back-to-back is. Who are the two
Wolves
teams?
Cavs.
Yeah, I feel okay about it. I'll be honest. Okay? Just okay. Like, I mean, we talked about this over the weekend. I don't know what to expect any given night from this team.
At this point, I'm feeling much more like I know what I'm going to expect, and I think we get that five-game win streak.
I think that's the trap, is knowing, feeling like you know what to expect.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm feeling good. I feel like even though the Heat were down a couple of key players, just being able to see the whole roster step up like that, obviously it's not going to happen on an every game basis, but just knowing that it is there,
right.
I think was like a really nice reassurance. Like JaMychal, we didn't talk enough about him. We have not seen JaMychal look like that JaMychal
from
last
three.
Year in a long time.
And needed him in the second half.
It's great to know that like it's still there.
I'm still here.
So yeah,
who's playing in the Wolves game? Who
I
do the
don't
Wolves
know.
Have to put on the court?
I don't know. That's why I like. That's why I'm feeling good. Yeah, no one really killed us in this game. I was feeling good. We did almost have the what's his name? The Gabe Vincent.
NBA legend Gabe Vincent.
Third name.
Derrick Jones Jr. also had a great game.
Yeah. That about wraps up. Let us know how you felt about the game at Locked On Clips. At Will Updike, at Charles Moncler. What's your Twitter?
At Brian S. Cullen.
At Brian S. Cullen. Coming up after this, we got a hot take Thursday from a very active Twitter user, at Step Back Tree, coming up right after this.
Okay.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to Hot Take Thursday.
Yeah.
This is a good hot take we got.
Yeah. Just want to reiterate, too, if you ever want to leave your hot take, which you should. We want to know what you're thinking. That's 213-986-7354. We won't ever freeze and cold take you.
We will never do that. But all right, go ahead and listen to what Step Back Tree has to say.
Yo, what's up, guys? This is your guy, Step Back Tree, on Twitter, otherwise known as Big Ben, but I prefer if you just call me Ben because that's my name. But that's besides the point. My hot take is that Montrezl Harrell is having his worst season as a Clipper so far. Sounds crazy, but if you really look at his numbers, other than the points he's having, he's been worse all across the board. He's averaging more minutes per game, which is supposed to increase your stats theoretically, right? But compared to last year, his field goal percentage, his free throw percentage, his stats, his assists per game, his steals per game, and his blocks per game are all down. The man is averaging more turnovers than assists, and we always talk about how Trez plays with energy, but he only plays with energy on the offensive side of the ball. And the defensive rating is the best it's been, but it really doesn't pass the eye test. You can look at on and off the court numbers. Well, Montrezl Harrell is off the court. The team has a better rebound rate, assist rate, steals rate, blocks rate, less turnovers, better defensive rating. He's not blocking shots at the rate he was last year. He's not keeping opposing bigs off the offensive glass at the rate he was last year. He's not impacting the game defensively like last year. The only thing he's really improved defensively is he'll pick up a charge every once in a while. That's it. And offensively, do not get me started. The Trez isolation, tunnel vision, try and power up shots over bigger guys than you. Basketball is the worst team. Is the worst offense the team has. And the little top of the key dribble moves that he does to try and power his way to the basket over three guys instead of kicking the ball out when there's nothing there, it's got to stop, man. It's terrible basketball, and I hate it. Like I said, he's averaging more turnovers than assists. That's wild. The amount of times he rolls to the rim or gets double down low or gets an offensive rebound, just one assist a game? 28 minutes? With the addition of PG and Kawhi, of all the returning players, he's gotten the most opportunity, and he's disappointed the hell out of me. This is the worst Montrez has been in the Clipper uniform. That's my hot take. Thanks.
Okay.
Heated,
albeit
reasonable.
Yeah, when you boil it down, it's a fair take. I will say, I think it's really funny how he's like, this is the worst Montrezl's been in a Clippers uniform. Because I think it might be the worst he's been, but it's not like
I don't
horrible.
Know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all relative.
Yeah, I mean, like...
I think Zoo's rim protection makes it seem like Trez is playing worse. Not that Trez is like a good rim protector. But when we're watching Zoo do these fantastic defensive plays early, it's hard to then watch the complete opposite.
Here's the thing, too. You know, like last year in the start of Trez's rise, he was obviously like very, very good and very competent. But like was part of not what made him look so good that our starting center was Marcin Gortat.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just like when the comparison isn't really there, like when you're head and shoulders the best center on a team, I think I awarded Trez a little bit more leniency on some of the defensive things.
Yeah, that got like, a little swept under the rug last year.
Yeah, I mean, it totally did. We even talked about it in our like off-season grades. You know, it was a knock on Trez even then, like the rebounding and some of the defensive stuff.
But I don't think it was in the stretches that it's in right now.
Yeah, he wasn't having to play.
That's a good point.
That's the big thing for me here with Trez. It's hard to criticize him without people thinking you're just hating on Trez. I think you can criticize him and still love who Trez is the player.
Yeah, it can be both.
And that's kind of where I'm at with it. And I think the whole thing with Trez, and he did close games last year, right? Like he was the closing center last year, but he didn't play the entire fourth quarter. And what that does, especially when you're playing such a small lineup, it allows the other team to scheme a lot more against it.
For sure.
Whereas if you have a 7-foot guy starting the first half of the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden it's this energy guy off the bench that's running circles.
It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, then it takes it into a gear you're not ready for. That's why the whole death lineup with the Warriors was called the death lineup because it was like, oh my God, we have to adjust to this new thing. And it's a sudden. Yeah, exactly. And I think having him come in halfway through the third to finish the game, you get to figure it out.
You know what's coming.
Exactly.
The whole way.
And so you play around it. And teams have kind of figured out, oh, and they're going small. If we just go big at that five position.
For even any point in the fourth quarter, you know?
We're getting buckets. Yeah, you're gonna get buckets in the paint.
I think my favorite point that Ben makes, as he would like to be called on the show.
Shout out Ben. This is a good take. I'll give it to him.
He says, averaging more turnovers than assists, which is a thing where I think it, I don't know if I want, I obviously don't care if it's like, I don't want it to be like a 3-1 ratio, assist to turnovers.
Right.
But even would be nice.
Sure.
A 1-1 from Trez on assist to turnover is like, I feel like kind of the best we can hope for. Cause they're not going to I don't think they should ask Trez to be passing a bunch.
Well, no, Trez isn't a playmaker. I think the big thing with Trez here, which we've talked about, we talked about on the show last week over the weekend.
Is like that tunnel vision.
Exactly.
Yeah, which he talks about in this take.
On the short roll, he doesn't have his head up. And usually when that happens, because Trez is such an energy guy and such a gifted offensive player, he's drawing defenses in. And you usually have at least one wing wide open. Usually above the break too, but
with the way the roster is constructed, you have two guys least.
And what he says, at one assist a game in 28 minutes.
Right. There should definitely be more. If he's kicking it out a little more,
there should
often,
be a half more at least.
I would take a half. I would take a half assist a game there.
And yeah, I mean, like a lot of times it does seem like he's content to settle for the like just dribbling, trying to bulldoze his way in.
With that little mini hook that he has.
Yeah.
That does work more often than not.
It does. It does. But when he's drawing in, I think teams have figured out that he's not kicking out from that position.
Oh, yeah.
So help defenders gladly roll in.
And if that hook is coming from a certain feet out, you're the team. You're like, yeah, go for it, dude.
Totally.
Like, push that hook out a couple more feet.
Yeah.
If you really want to. It just brings up kind of, you know, I'm waiting for a Woj bomb about the Clippers as we've recorded the last like three podcasts. Totally. We're getting to that point where if we're not moving Trez, which it doesn't seem like we are, that is based on nothing.
And we're not saying that that's like the move. Or
no,
the
not at all.
Move.
But I'm saying then it comes that contract thing of what extension do we offer Trez?
Well, yeah, what's his value? And this is something we talked about today at the game, is what is Trez's, because the big name that was linked to him was Atlanta. They have no need for him now.
Yeah.
They might have too many bigs at this point.
Yeah.
So, and that seemed like the team that was going to kind of pay him in the offseason. So if Atlanta's off the table, who out there needs a 6'7" center that's going to pay him starting money? But I still think you can't start Trez. I don't think he's
Knicks,
a starter.
Knicks, baby.
Yes, the Knicks.
Julius Randle and Montrezl Harrell.
It's honestly the Knicks or the Hornets.
Right, which I don't.
I'm not saying go there for
his
career.
I think Jovan was bringing up the Hornets today, too, because it ties him back to North Carolina, where he's from and all that. But
and they might just be like, dude, we'll give you $19 million.
But will
year.
They? It's Jordan at the helm. Jordan wouldn't pay Kemba. Is
yeah,
he
but
really
he also drafted Kwame Brown because his hands were big.
Okay.
So,
right, fair enough, dude.
Touché.
But what would you pay Trez a year for 4 years?
It slides
every day for me. Honestly.
Totally, I would say the average of where I'm at is probably around 10 to 12 million a year.
Oof, I think he's gonna get more than that.
Oh, I totally do too. But I think that's what he's worth at the Clippers. I think anything 14. Above that,
I think 14 is reasonable. I think 15.
That's
so
much money.
15,
for a bench
you start
player.
To get into like he's an like Justin Russo said it. He's like, how much are you really paying an energy big?
That's exactly.
Big.
I mean, the thing is I think it was Jovan Buha of The Athletic who brought this up in his piece. But like, it makes me want to look at like Rashawn Holmes or something, because like that's somebody who's getting paid five, you know?
Yeah.
And like you have to trade for him because he's got another year on his deal, but I. And you look at what the Rockets just did with Capella. Like, it's not hard to find a big man out there. You know,
oh, did
like,
the Rockets find a big man?
Damn, what if that's the next trade that's coming? Trust with the Rockets.
Back to the Rockets.
Back to the Rockets. But no, this is this is an energetic but a take that I think a lot of people would agree with.
Yeah, I mean, Brian pointed out, but like it is definitely the stretches that he is playing that is like making these lapses defensively so much more noticeable.
You see him over and over. Dude, Aldridge in that Spurs game, we watched Aldridge get the ball on the right block, take two dribbles, turn around, and shoot.
Oh, like
they ran the same sequence over and over.
And there's no reason for them not to.
Yeah, if it keeps working, keep doing it.
And my thing is some of this mitigated by rotation at all?
Yes.
Like if just breaking up Trez's minutes, like
run a half marathon instead of the full or something, Doc. You know?
Like, yeah.
Get him out there a little bit. That wraps it up on the takes.
Yeah, I think so.
For sure. One more time, you guys can leave your takes at 213-986-7354. Whenever you want, really.
You gotta figure out what that word is.
Oh, that's a good call. It probably spells something. Someone's figuring it out right now. It probably spells something horrible. Probably spells Mungo Jerry from my early folk heads out there. Coming up after this, we're going to be talking some trade situations if there's pressure to get Marcus Morris. But first, Brian, do you like baseball?
No.
Hell yeah, you like baseball. This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans like Brian Cullen. Follow your favorite baseball team to Arizona. Check out 10 stadiums, 15 MLB teams, 75-degree weather, all 10 stadiums in
Greater Phoenix. Are those within the 50 miles of the Greater Phoenix area?
50 miles, which means 50 minutes, because it's country miles out there.
Phoenix time.
Okay,
Phoenix time,
if we're talking Phoenix, I'm in.
Check out amazing restaurants and bars, including tons of craft breweries like Four Peaks, Angel's Trumpet Ale House, and Goldwater Brewing Company. No relation to Barry Goldwater.
Love it.
Enjoy live music from local and national artists and explore museums featuring everything from native heritage to modern art to musical instruments from around the world. And Arizona is known for its incredible landscapes and thrilling outdoor adventures. Hit the road and explore Arizona's urban centers, ghost towns.
Wait, aren't there quirky outposts too?
Countless quirky outposts. And you know what else is out there? Tucson! Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. One more time, that's visitarizona.com/springtraining.
All right, so welcome to Shavings.
More trade shavings.
By the time you're listening to this, you'll be hours away from the trade deadline.
Yeah, and if there's, just full disclosure, if there's some big Clippers trade, we'll come out with like an emergency pod or something Thursday, the day that you're listening to this, because this team moves a little in silence.
Yeah.
Let's just say. So there's no, Iguodala is now off the table. Robert Covington's been off the table.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Iggy going to the Heat, best case scenario for the Clippers in terms of the Iguodala thing, he's not going to the Lakers, which they really could have used them.
Yeah,
or the Mavs, which I think makes them a scary
team. We don't have to give up anything to get him. But does this put pressure to get Morris? Because the Lakers seem like they want Morris. There's always reports that it's Windhorse. Was it Windhorse who called it an arms race between the Lakers and Clippers? Which I don't know if it's an arms race if there's one arm involved. And that arm is Marcus Morris, right?
Yeah.
No, he's got two.
Fuck you, dude.
Can't confirm.
Pod's over, bro. If you hear the window breaking, it's me jumping out of Will's apartment. But do you think there's pressure to get Marcus Morris now? Or to make a move?
I think...
The Heat planted a flag with their moves today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't think enough has changed in the landscape for like a to push the pressure on us to make a move, like
especially in the West.
Yeah, like I as many moves as we have made at the last two trade deadlines, we've never made a move just for the hell of making a move, you
for
know?
Sure,
like it has always been to advance the team forward. So I mean, I guess I do put trust in, like, if they think that Marcus Morris is what that is, which I'm still not fully convinced of.
I'm not either.
I believe it. I don't know, though.
I get why the front office has interest in Marcus Morris. When you look at his size, his position, his ability to shoot, you know, he's not by any stretch an amazing defender, but he's an average defender.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think he's probably going to be starting. Or I'm sorry, coming off the bench.
I was
sorry.
Like, damn.
Coming off the Kawhi's moving to the bench.
Yeah.
Coming off the bench. In a lot of ways, when you break down some of the numbers, you could look at him as an upgrade from JaMychal Green, which is crazy to say, but size and shooting.
I'm pretty
wise,
high off the Heat performance he just had. So
totally. Yeah. But when you look at the span, but
definitely.
I think one of my biggest hesitations with Marcus Morris, aside from some of the comments he's made this year, is he's the number one option in New York right now.
Mm-hmm.
And how does he take it going to a team where he becomes
seventh?
Yeah. Fifth at best. Fifth at best. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, how does he take that? And does that production stay the same when he's not the number one guy?
He's not having a 38-point game again as a Clipper, like he did against the Clippers.
Yeah, unless something horrific happens with injuries.
Yeah, I think if Rock Divers is still around, Marcus Morris would already be on the team after that game. But I know that it's been reported he was great in the locker room in Boston. I just still have concerns about what his presence in the locker room does. And this team really seems like they're starting to get along. Like, we all commented on it today when they were shooting around. It was like, everybody was in a great mood today.
I described it on, I think, the last episode as, like, that part in a movie when, like, there's about to be, like, a phenomenon or, like, an alien thing where everything starts to, like, kind of shake.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like right now with the Clippers. It's like, absolutely, everything's kind of like, oh, shit, dude.
Like, they're kind of freezing out media, but I'm into it because that seems to be bringing them closer together. And it's a fun thing.
Also bringing the media close together. There's just been some great media hangs lately.
Unrelated.
Chick Hearn is cracking.
Yeah, Chick Hearn's a good time. I'm kind of part of the school. We only got a couple minutes left, but I'm kind of like, Stein and Windhorst were talking about how the Clips are going to be involved with apparently multiple moves. Both the Morris twins were in rumors for the Clippers. The Knicks wanted Shamet, which
count me
all the way out. Not happening. We can't deal Sham.
We just
unless we don't
have any other like rookie contracts for people who are actual contributing members. Like
6 foot five, 40% 3-point shooters who can also dribble.
So that to me is completely off the table.
Unless it's another 3 a.m. blockbuster,
totally
third star thing.
There's one name that came up today that for me makes me more interested than any of the other names that have come up, and the Suns have started taking calls for Kelly Oubre Jr. That's a player I would be interested in.
I think they're just taking calls though. I don't think it's
I would make that call.
I just be like, what do you want? And they'd be like, Shamet and your first and Mo, and it'd be like, I'm saying no.
Yeah, I'm saying no too.
I would probably say no, but I wouldn't say it right away. I'll tell you that.
We'll get back to you.
Totally.
And then knock it back.
And then stare at myself in the mirror for an hour.
I'm saying no just because I don't see how Kelly Oubre could fit into the starting lineup with Paul George and Kawhi.
Yeah, like, you like put him
he doesn't have the size to play the four, to defend the four. I mean, I guess he's like kind of switch. He's switchy like Mo is.
He's just another kind of tweener guy. Size.
He's a 3-and-D. He's a solid 3-and-D guy.
Yeah,
and he is nice on the eyes.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you call, and you're like, "What's up?" And I just think they're highballing people.
I mean, if you package him with Baines, and if the team really is looking for another big. Now. I'm not all
Baines
about giving
fallen
Baines
off a cliff.
I'm not trying to give him 30 minutes a night.
He's also 33 years old.
Baines is 33 years old?
Yeah.
For some reason, Baines
is
always...
I'm 32 and I resent that tone of voice.
Okay, you don't play professional basketball. I'm
not
also
yet.
30.
Not yet.
I got my 4 years of eligibility, you dickhead. No, I always think of Baines as like, for some reason when I see Aaron Baines, I think of like dickhead 16-year-old at a gas station. Like, I think of him as like a young kid. You know what I mean?
Because he has the top.
It's pretty specific, but I know exactly what you mean.
The Baines Zoo was kind of floated for like a Baines trade or something like that, but I would be furious if
we just go full Stephen A. Shamet for Booker. Straight up.
Straight up.
Who says no?
Oh, man. Do we have any time for this extra hot take that I don't?
Let's skip that. Is there any other trade that you think could happen, would see happen? Maybe like a lower key move that we haven't really thought of. I guess Markieff Morris kind of falls into that, but
yeah, I just think it might be too many moves, too little guys, where it's like maybe we ship out Magruder. Oh, that'd be fun. I'm still holding up my 85%. I think a trade happens.
Somebody had a really funny trade in the trade machine that worked, which was Avery Bradley for Rodney Magruder. and then the projection was you have not affected this team's winning percentage.
Dude, if we traded back for Avery Bradley, I don't know. I was talking about a phenomenon happening earlier. That would be a true phenomenon.
Yeah.
Do you think we go after any random little pieces?
I don't. This front office is so hard to predict. From all accounts of Doc, the team is extremely happy with where they are.
Yeah, he said he doesn't think it's going to change. That was kind of like a Doc bomb at the pregame presser.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that there's a lot of truth behind the Marcus Morris deal. I think during the game they were probably on the phone trying to work something out with that.
Someone tweeted us, they're like, wow, the trade chatters really died down. What do you think happened? And I just wanted to tweet back, well, tip off was 10 minutes ago.
We're watching the game.
Maybe some periphery, like you were saying, like a Magruder out kind of thing. As far as like splash, I don't see any big splash happening. I don't think we've got the pieces to get probably the biggest name in still available in the trade season, which is Drew Holiday. And I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, they've already said like no.
Yeah, so I don't see a big splash happening.
I don't either. And I'm happy about that.
I'm fine. The team is great.
This win, I'm like, yeah, let's keep this team together. Let's keep this going. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Where can these people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian S. Cullen. You can find my writings on Clipperholics and the Clipset podcast on Twitter at Clipset Pod with Joseph Rye Ward, another writer from Clipperholics.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much for being on. Friday's episode, where I have a preview of the weekend back-to-back against the Wolves and Cavs. I'm bullish on both of those. We're going to have a love, marry, kill about something.
We'll figure it out.
Whatever else happens between now and then in Clipperland, which, hey, could be a whole hell of a lot with the trade deadline. Thank you so much for listening. You find us on iTunes, Spotify, Deezer, review. We'll read it. Leave your hot takes also every Thursday at 213-986-7354. I have been positive Chuck Mockler.
I've been William the Opinion Updike. Appreciate you.